Welcome back to News and Views as we come to you live from Tall Towers Aviation today. We're talking, we've been referenced to it a number of times, drones. How these drones that are taken to the sky are going to be used in ag applications. I've kept Ag Commissioner Doug Goring with me. Commissioner, how are farmers using them?
Well, what they're looking at doing is managing or monitoring, because we got two sides of this story. We have the aerial applicators and commercial applicating industry that is working at managing a crop, and we're going to have, on the front side of this, we're going to have the unmanned aerial systems that are going to be actually monitoring that crop, its development, diseases, maybe deficiencies, water deficiencies, nitrogen deficiencies, phosphorus deficiencies. There's going to be so many applications. They're talking this thing is growing, and about 90% of all the UASs that are going to be sold out there are going to be applicable to agriculture in the United States of America. That's huge.
And so describe them to the public who might not know. What do they look like? What size are they? How do they fly them? Where do they land them?
I held one the other day. It was about maybe 3 feet wingspan. The thing was made out of Kevlar and some type of plastics. The thing was very durable, and I bet it weighed maybe 10 pounds. Yeah. Maybe 10 pounds, and this thing could actually fly for a couple hours up in the sky, battery operated.
Somebody's doing it by remote control, or are they doing it by computer?
Yep, they're doing it by computer. They're laying in the maps, and they have
They're landing it in their front yard?
They're landing right out in the field. They're taking it off. They're holding it up and throwing it into the air, and it's going around, and it's circling. You can get the bigger ones, too. I saw a bigger one up at Northland where that thing had a wingspan of about 8 feet, and this carries a lot bigger payload, different electronics. It can go out there and do different optical signatures. You can do infrared radar.
How high do they get?
They have to stay at 400 feet and below if they're going to operate. But that's still a problem, because if we have the aviation industry out there trying to apply pesticides, guess what? Those guys are getting down there at 20 feet and 15 feet above a crop. They're coming out of there. This is where some of the concerns are, the liabilities, the see and avoid issues. We have to be concerned about who's going to be operating what in what area, and that's part of what the Northern Plains Unmanned System Authority is going to have to start to develop, is the rules and how this is all going to work. We're a little behind on this. I know Cindy's going to talk about this, but we are probably going to be the model for the rest of the United States because of the airspace, the environment that we have up here, and the ability to go in and monitor so much and do so much of this. We have companies gearing up to do a lot more businesses already. I've heard up to 180 of these little unmanned aerial systems have already been sold to farmers. So now it's
Farmers are buying them.
Farmers are buying them. Now it's a matter of figuring out when they can get them up into the air, when they can start doing some of this work and monitoring crop, and technology is catching up really, really fast.
Let's bring the Aeronautics Commissioner for the state of North Dakota and the Executive Director of the North Dakota Agricultural Aviation Association, Cindy, back in on this conversation. Cindy, good to have you on News and Views.
Thank you. Go Sue. Yeah,
there you go.
I had to get that in.
My wife, every time I say that, starts running. Okay, so from your standpoint, I mean, the people that you represent, you've been around, the aviation community all year long. Life.
Yes, let's talk about how old I am, but how long I've been around.
No.
That's good. No, I like that. And the other point I'm going to bring up here, I did serve on the governor's airspace integration team. So obviously I have, I'm pro UAS, unmanned aircraft systems, but I'm also representing the ag sprayers in the state of North Dakota. And
these would make me very nervous if I'm an
expert. Exactly. We're sharing airspace. The intent of the test sites is obviously that those test sites are going to have a NOTAM out telling people that if they call in that, there's going to be activity at those test sites. And those are known areas. Now what we have existing, we expect it to exist, and we don't have the capabilities of stopping it, nor do we think that that's the right thing to do. They're going to be flying beyond the test site confines. And we know that. Just when Doug just said that, we know there's 100 and plus sold in this state. But so how do we share that airspace safely? And because we're the aerial sprayers are the ones likely to be sharing that airspace. So what we're looking at is trying to get the word out to growers, co-ops, elevators, anybody that is interested in utilizing these, that safety is our main concern. And let alone there be a, you know, an incident, we don't even want that to happen. So it's going to involve communication. And what we're looking at is asking those that are going to be using UASs to at least contact the local aerial sprayers and let them know where they're going to be at, open up that line of communication with them. We're not going to tell them they can't be out there or say, you know, this is illegal or, you know, you're not in the test site. And caution them that we want to share that airspace and we know they're going to be good for us.
I want to bring David Gust in on this after the break here because this is what he does. This is what he does for a living. So stick around. More coming your way on News and Views. Chin, if you're just joining us, we were talking about drones. We were talking about their use in agriculture, how this affects other people who make their living up in the sky, doing what they need for ag producers out there. David Gust is one of those. He's president of the North Dakota Agricultural Aviation Association. David, good to have you on News and Views.
Thanks, Joel.
And Cindy Beck stays with us. She's the executive director of that very organization, along with a number of other hats. How many different hats do you have when it comes to aviation?
Quite a few.
Yeah,
actually,
exactly.
Quite a few, since I don't even fly, right.
I'm surprised how you were able to do that. Beck must have almost told you have to learn how to fly.
Well, I did solo. I'm 1985.
Okay. But you let that go like my cousin Doug, right?
Yep. He's not doing it. You're right.
All right, guys, and David, this is probably best put to you. You're up there doing what farmers call on you to do, and the men and women who do what you do. How do you sit with the use of these drones? How is this going to affect what you do?
Well, it is a little scary to a lot of us, and, you know, we just want to know they're out there. We want to be able to see them, to see the people operating them, so that we can stay away from them and not have any kind of incident.
So there's an acknowledgement, basically, that they're here. And they're going to be here, and they're going to be used.
Yes, yes. I've talked to some of my customers who are going to be using them this year.
And so, you know, if you know that, it begs this question, though. If I travel between Page and Fargo, like I'm going to do in a little bit, it's regulated. There's going to be somebody out there with bubbles on the top of his rig telling me you're driving too fast if I go too fast. Yep. What regulates these?
Well, the FAA is, in their position is that they do. And they say they're supposed to be certificated. They say they're supposed to be licensed pilots flying them. They say, you know, they regulate the airspace between 400 feet and the ground. But there's questions about that. And so the people who build these things and operate them are going to be putting them in the fields. Their position is that they don't regulate below 400 feet. And there was a recent administrative law judge ruling that says the FAA doesn't have a blanket regulation on this, and that's being appealed. In the meantime, we just want to be safe.
So and who's making the argument that the FAA doesn't have that authority?
Well, the industry.
So basically they're saying they don't. There isn't any regulation needed for that.
Correct.
Okay. I'm going to be honest with you, Cindy, that scares me a little bit. I mean, these things are up in the sky above a person.
Right. Well, and I think one of the reasons is, you know, we've always had the hobbyists out there. And again, they operate line of sight and they're using a mechanism to control their aircraft. But now we're getting so that I don't want to use the word inundated, but there's quite a few more using that same airspace that the ag sprayers are. And, you know, they'd like to say we're hobbyists at this point. But we know that they're doing research and we're doing different things, and as the aerial sprayers, we're looking at the fact that in the future, these are probably going to be good for the aerial spraying industry as well in some shape or form. So, yes,
you could see how that could be, though. I mean, they're going to give you information about a field that helps you even do your job better, David.
Sure. Sure, and we have no problem with that. And it's not just our industry being affected. Also, there's pipeline patrols, there's power line patrols, there's air ambulance, helicopters that will be flying at these levels too. And you know, all these industries will be affected by this.
Okay, so because it's already happening, though, and this is in my mind where I'm you guys understand this better than what I do, but because it's already happening, I mean, the horse is out of the barn, David.
Exactly. And that's why I'm contacting all of my co-ops, seed dealers, and that kind of thing, and talking to them about it. I want to meet with them. I want to meet with the people who they're bringing in to operate these devices in my area.
What reaction are you getting?
Absolutely willing to do that.
So it hasn't been a conflict as though it's two industries bumping heads at all.
No, we just want to get some policy out there. I mean, it just occurred to me something as simple as, you know, a portable strobe light that they could put on top of their pickup and plug into their cigarette lighter and have that running while they're operating near a field. I think that would help us, you know, see that one of these things is out in the field, because these things are going to be very difficult to see from our airplane at 130 to 160 miles an hour.
Do they have, Cindy, the ability to get away? Can they go to higher altitude? Can the farmer lose ability to control them?
That could happen. They're computerized. We know that there could be some defects.
My computer gets away from me all the time. So,
you know, and I'm thinking on their safety side, probably their method of control, if, you know, without losing control, let's just say, and they see an ag plane enter the arena, the field, that they're going to take it out of the sky. But in all cases, that might not work. And, you know, and we look at that, and because we can't see them, you know, we're asking, as David was saying, we're hoping that the manufacturers would even put some type of a strobe light on. We know that's weight. We know that is additive. And we also ask that, from a manufacturing standpoint of UAS, is that they be brightly colored. Because that helps, although...
And not green.
Right, and it helps, but even then, when you're up in the ag plane, and I'm not the one that's up there, but I've been told they're very, very difficult to see. That's something that small in bright sunlight, and even with strobes. So that's why that communication piece, and I will bring in, I've talked to Gary Knutson at the North Dakota Agricultural Association, and of course their membership is extremely large and takes in the co-ops, takes in growers, takes in associations.
Gary does a great job.
Does a great job, and we had our conversation actually a couple days ago, and we have come out with a proactive stance of what we would like to see as an industry, you know, as the egg sprayers. How can we make this happen without trying to avoid incidents?
But, guys, I go back to this. Yeah, I mean, you're saying this, but it's already happening.
Yes.
They're going to be out there. They're already sold, David.
Yeah. Right, I understand that. That's why I'm talking to the guys in my area that are using them, and that's why we're trying to get all aerial applicators in the state to talk to their local people to see if they're going to be used, and if they are, what kind of standard procedures could we use to operate in the area? You know, if you see a ag plane come into the area and is turning close to you, will you shut it down and wait till he finishes before you relaunch? You know, those are the kind of things we'd like to see done so that, you know, everybody remains safe.
Because how much damage can one of these do to you if you hit one?
Well, I mean, a turbine aircraft, if it hits a prop of that thing, we're talking automatic teardown, $100,000 if nothing's wrong. And, you know, upwards of $250,000 to $500,000 could be the damage. You bring an airplane down out of the sky, you know, a brand new turbine's $1 million.
Not to mention loss of life.
Well, exactly. And, right. You know, loss of revenue, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we're hoping they're insured properly. I don't know of anybody writing insurance on these things, but, you know, those are all things.
It wouldn't be the policy I'd rush out to say, I got one for you.
Right.
I mean,
right.
It just wouldn't be. It's built for something to happen. But I also, Cindy, understand the ag community wanting that type of information and being able to get that. I mean, what a useful tool for what they do.
It's extremely useful, and I think as different payloads or sensors are developed, I don't even think we've maybe touched the surface of what they're going to be capable of doing, and it's all going to be what technology has developed.
237-5948, 1-800-880-5346. Ben has a question or a comment. Ben, you're on News and Views. Go ahead.
Yeah, Joel, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's Friday. How can I not be?
How long have you been a disc jockey?
Well, I'm not a disc jockey. I'm a talk show host.
That's right. So why do you use the term drone?
What should I use?
Unmanned aircraft.
Okay. Why don't I do that then? I'll do that, Ben. They're unmanned aircraft.
Correct.
How's that?
Yeah.
I still call them drones. Yeah. You know, he just doesn't like it. But the truth of the matter is they're up there.
Exactly.
And it isn't just in ag applications either. Like you said, Cindy, they're going to go in a lot of different places. So, guys, could it be handled at the state level? Or does some of what you're describing, some of the protection that might, or the common sense part of it, need to happen at the federal level?
Well, you know, from a regulatory standpoint, the state doesn't regulate airspace. The Federal Aviation Administration is your airspace regulator. So it's a little bit difficult for the state to come in and try and regulate that airspace. But yet, the common sense approach, I believe, is really the route to go. If we can And that's why we appreciate being on today, because trying to get the word out to growers and people that are buying UASs, it would be great that that we can communicate. Very easy to know who's the aerial sprayer in your area. And if you don't know, for heaven's sakes, call the Aeronautics Commission. We can tell you. And from that standpoint, if we can bring the communication together, I think we're, you know, in an attempt to avoid any incidents and promote, I think that's the way we want to go.
There's another part to this, too. You talked about, because I asked you, the financial effect it can have, David, on your industry. But for that ag producer out there, too, he's got an investment in it.
And absolutely.
The insurance policies aren't probably jumping up and down to insure him. He doesn't want the thing getting wrecked either.
No, and they're expensive. I mean, $25,000 to $100,000 for these things, you know. They're very expensive. And
How long can they stay in the air?
Well, I understand, depending on the battery life, a couple hours.
Interesting. Yeah. It's a whole new world, isn't
it? It's sure a new is. World, and it's an exciting world. We have to admit that.
All right, let's take some more questions or comments. 237-5948, 1-800-880-5346. Welcome back to News and Views. As you can tell, Amy's in her Friday mode. AI, did you see the email that I got from Darren Cadillac from up in the Pisac area?
I did not.
Go in my email box, and you're going to see it there. He just sent it to me. It has photos that he took. I can tell it's his farm. I've been to his farm, and so what it is an unmanned aerial vehicle, and it's flying above his farm at Pisac, and they'll give people a good example. We'll put that at my website at kfgo.com. You can see kind of what the folks are getting at here. I'm going to just lay it out. If you had the power to do it, Cindy, how would you fix this? And it isn't as though there's some range war going on here. I don't want to put that out there. That isn't what I'm getting at. But what I am getting at is there's a safety concern. And when you have safety concerns, the word regulation comes up. And we live in an area, in a state, that doesn't like the word regulation. So you as aeronautics commissioner, how do you fix this?
Oh, I wish there was just a simple fix, Joel. And I think it's going to come along a ways. The whole industry is going to mature here, and we're going to see what happens with it. And that's what the test sites are for. So until we have information from the test sites and looking at the results of some of that flight and, you know, what's safe, what's unsafe. You know, there's still the things that, even in our industry, we haven't fixed everything. So common sense approach right now, so we can avoid any conflicts. We're not having a conflict. I want to point that out. We're not, I don't think our industry is against them, and I would, everybody here in this room would say that. And we're not going to be able to, we can't propagate necessarily the rules. We can come out with some items we'd like to see. But from an aeronautics standpoint, again, from the state of North Dakota, we aren't the regulators of the airspace. So it's going to have to be the Federal Aviation Administration. Now, we have been suggested that aeronautics be a clearinghouse. Well, that puts some liability back on aeronautics, that we're going to know where everybody's flying. And that's not necessarily how we want to handle it, I don't think, from an aeronautics standpoint. So,
David, I'm going to ask you the same thing. If you had the power, what would you do?
I don't know. I just don't know. I mean, this is a new industry. It's a new technology. I don't want to see it stopped. It's here. It's something we're going to be dealing with. I just want to make sure that all the, you know, the guys in the state are safe when they're out spraying. And I don't think the UAV operators want to lose their machines, and they don't want to cause any harm at all. So the thing to do is to really communicate well in your local area when you're going to be using these things, and just set up a procedure. How things are going to operate when there is appears to be a conflict.
But again, I go back to federal or state. And Mike, what we're talking about here is as though we built an interstate and never put signs
on it
yet.
Yep.
I mean, it really is. This is going to happen. It's happening right now. I just got pictures from Pisac. It's happening.
It's the nature of the beast, and we're going to deal with it as it comes forward. We're not the regulators here. We can't make anything happen. All we can do is communicate in our local areas and talk about what we're dealing with and maybe find some way to live together in the airspace.
What I fear, though, is that regulation will follow bad accidents, and it won't come proactively. You guys keep using the words proactive, and it won't come that way because there's really no incentive for the feds to get involved. They're going to get a black eye, and you know how reactionary government can be versus proactive. And then you've got, if everybody tries to build this system internally as a state, or as locals, you know, like you've done, David, where you're talking to the people around saying, hey, let us know ahead of time, give us a call, I've talked to my co-ops, all of this. I mean, with all due respect, that isn't the answer either, because that's an imperfect system. I mean, there has to be some rule of law behind it, or it's not going to work.
I agree, but and that's coming. It's not going to be in place this year. So we're dealing with what we're dealing with now, and so we're just looking for ways to best operate and to best stay safe, and communication and education are the two best ways we do it.
But the reason I sense that at times, Cindy, we're dancing around this is because you're a minority. There's more farmers than there is people flying. But most of the people flying are farmers too.
Right. Interestingly enough, I bet you 60 to 70% of the aerial sprayers also farm. And given that statistic, they know that UAS is going to be good in the future for agriculture, and it's probably going to be good for ag aviation. We just don't know exactly how it's all going to work yet. So, you know, and coming from a state where, yes, you're right, we're kind of the state that doesn't like to see a lot of regulation. And if we can work together and make it work, actually, we're actually at very much the forefront of this whole industry. And given the fact that our ag commissioner is probably one and the only one in the country that understands this industry, the UAS industry as well, we're at the very, very
well, I'd argue
forefront.
We got to do something. And we got to do it now, because I don't want to read about it on the front page of the paper and then find out about it through our radio news, and then all of a sudden everybody says we should have. So, guys, thank you. Thanks for your time. Welcome back to News and Views as we come to you live from Tall Towers Aviation here. And we're in Toby's shop is where we're at. His spray plane sitting right across from us. It's a great day for farmers to come out. Lord knows they're not in the field yet. I didn't see one person stirring around on the drive up to Page this morning. We're taking your phone calls at 1-800-880-5346. Let's get to Art. Art, you're on News and Views. Go ahead, Art.
Hi. Just a little comment on the unmanned aerial system. I do believe that you need to get out there quickly because there is conflict in the airspace, especially there will be this summer when we're talking about agricultural use. So I'm with you there. I think you need to use a belt and suspenders type of approach and make it easy, not onerous. And you know, a couple of suggestions that I would have. We're not the FAA. We don't have regulatory ability over the airspace, but certainly as a state, we can apply certain fees or taxes and make programs available. One suggestion I would have would be anybody that purchases an unmanned aerial system pays an extra fee, tax, what have you, whatever you want to call it, in order to purchase that system and utilize it in the state. And those keys then can be utilized to make receptors available to aerial applicators. And so then you put the onus on the manufacturer of the unmanned system to put a very small transmitter that would put maybe 2 or 3 mile radius of a transmission, and you'd have to get FCC as far as what frequency you could tie up. But then the aerial applicator could purchase this receiver at a reduced price via these fees, and you have the aerial applicators happy. They have a safety net there, and you have a small fee that's put on the aerial system make this system work, and then also make it easy as well by putting a website up that a person that owns an aerial system, an unmanned aerial system, can go put township range and section number. This is where I'm going to be operating my system. Make it available on an app as well, so people, obviously these people are somewhat tech savvy that are operating these things, and just make it easy rather than onerous.
Yeah, but that's, again, that's something that's local common sense that you just brought up, whether some of it works, some of it doesn't. People can agree or disagree on that, but that's regulation. That's causing
it's regulation at the state level. It's not FAA. You're not regulating airspace use.
I get that, Art, but my point is it's not happening. So
sure.
And thank you for your call, Art. I mean, my point is they can say, well, we should do this, we should do that. I mean, David Gust, when he said it instantly resonated with me, he said, you know, take a strobe light and sit there and put it on top of your pickup, plug it into your cigarette lighter while you're out there running this thing. I see that sitting on a township road. I know somebody's flying a UAV. And I know they're checking out their field. They're checking out their crop. Boom, now I know. That's pretty easy. I mean, he can see that from the sky. And to me, if you're an egg producer, you'd want that. And just what you heard described earlier, you'd want to go online. You'd want to say, hey, I'm going to be at township da-da-da-da, section da-da-da-da. You know, I'm going to be out there checking my fields today. Because what you have in the sky can be worth such a value to you that you don't want anything bad happening to it either. Not to mention the fact that these guys that are in the sky are your neighbors and your friends, and they're people you need another day. I remember not too long ago, we couldn't find enough aerial sprayers up there to get the job done for farmers. And what happened? Well, the ground sprayers met the demand. They went out there and they built bigger sprayers from the ground, things that could go through wetland, things that, because they knew that they couldn't find enough of the Tobys of the world to get the job done anymore. They weren't making too many more of these guys. And so there's got to be some common ground here, but somebody's got to get active. And somebody is going to have to do something that they're not going to like doing on the political side, which means they're going to have to do something that uses the word regulate. And nobody's going to like that, because nobody likes being told what to do by government. And I don't care what state you're in. We always say, well, our state. Well, welcome to the world, folks. It's every state.